This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 144. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com
and you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
My name's David Hinchliffe and this week I'm joined by Berners and Mark Garraway. I know it's a little bit late, but it's the first show back of the new year, so Happy New Year to you both.
Happy New Year, Coach. How are you?
I'm very well, yes. I had an excellent Christmas and New Year period, and now we're back on the ball and getting all excited about the pre-season here in the UK, which is the theme of this week's show. So Nets are starting all over the UK and Europe and North America, and people are dusting off their whites. So you've already started though, haven't you, Mark?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. I'm at Millfield School at the moment, sitting in the office. Just had two sessions this morning and got a whole heap ready for this afternoon with some of our talented cricketers. Yeah, it's all going.
Excellent. Berners, are you going to be getting to Nets this winter?
I might well make out for a little trundle, but as per my my rant a few weeks ago, you know, it's duly done with no reward at the end of it, so I'll probably go and get slaughtered around the nets or take a few wickets, but nothing will come of it. So I've just got back from Dubai, so I've been lucky enough to have some early year sunshine, so I might just wallow in that for the pre-season and just go straight into it, I think.
You've been watching England, so you've got some you're just improving by osmosis, just by being in the presence of the great men. You're improving.
They only had a tight win though, didn't they? They got a bit cheeky a couple of times against some of my old associate mates.
Yeah, I tell you what, Gareth, they did absolutely brilliantly. Boyd Rankin didn't look out of place whatsoever. He really bowled with a lot of gas, and you could see he was troubling quite a few of the England batsmen just in terms of the pace he was bowling at. So, I think anyone who thought that was going to be a preconceived outcome was duly wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. They did well on it, and it's another good thing for associate cricket. I'm sure that our friends in Ireland won't be too happy to hear that Boyd's done another brilliant performance against England that might alert them to his talents even more than it has already. But no, it's great for the associate game to be able to compete against the number one team in the world, and they did compete.
Let's talk a little bit about pre-season now then, because that's going to be of interest to people this week. I suppose looking back at the way this time of year has changed, you must have seen quite a lot of changes compared to when you first started playing cricket, Gareth.
Yeah, I mean, pre-season, I remember my first pre-season was many moons ago down at Hampshire, and we all got together on the 1st of April, because you never used to do anything before the 1st of April. I came backwards and forwards with my arms with David Gower next to me. And I think we did a couple of laps of the ground and then got into some nets. Was back in 1990, I think that was. So it's changed hugely.
It's even changed at club level as well. I mean, I don't really remember winter nets even starting until relatively recently, and even then it's gone from being something which, you know, you turn up and roll your arm over and have a beer afterwards, to think a little bit more. Everything's become a little bit more structured. I mean, it's still probably a long way from the professional game, as you would imagine, but there's certainly a lot more structure to the way, you know, there's an actual plan to the nets now, rather than everyone rocking up and just deciding what they're going to do. But when they get there, it's good to see that even that's changed in the last sort of two or three winter nets that we've been having here. So
it's good. And I think what people are beginning to realise is the off season, and you do need a bit of a break between the end of a season and getting back into it. But certainly from a professional perspective nowadays, in county cricket especially, people are on 12-month contracts and they generally come back in around the first week of November or last week of October. And the great opportunity you have at that point is that you can really go into detail on what happened in the summer, put together some proper development plans that will strengthen the strengths and put some work into the development areas for each player. And also it's done in a non-sort of threatening environment, so you can get the player ready for the beginning of the season when they get back in the competition.
Yeah, I think it's moved, hasn't it, from kind of a bit more, well, this is probably what we should do. Let's find someone to give us a couple of laps around the outfield, like you said, for things a bit more based on evidence and research and
yeah,
ultimately results, isn't it? And that's the way I think that's cricket's going generally. Everything has to be looking towards the evidence and proving that something works.
Without a shadow of a doubt, and at Millfield School, we've done some screenings on players this week and are putting some programs in place. And even at school level, there's no excuse for it not to have evidence and research behind it, because there's nothing worse than for a player than going down a route of getting some coaching that's based in an ad hoc fashion that actually isn't going to be pertinent to some improvement over the course of the summer.
And speaking of evidence and research and coaching and all that kind of thing, I noticed that recently there's been some movements in the IPL coaching, which is always interesting to me. There's still a few weeks to go before we get some proper IPL action. So at the moment, it's all sort of all about transfer news. And the big news is, that, of course, the players moving around, Kevin Peterson going for $2 million, all that kind of thing. But in the background also, we've seen new coaches at KKR and Delhi Daredevils. So I was thinking, Gareth, if you're a new coach and you're walking into a new team and you want to put your stamp on it and you want to make sure that they're going to be successful for a tournament, where do you start with something like that?
Well, I think it narrows down what you do even more so, because the nature of IPL is that you get very limited time with the players, and it's very much a heavy competition schedule. So in terms of development of them as players from a technical or tactical perspective, there's a limitation to what you can actually do. So that's the first point that you need to raise. So to me, the first two things that you need to do when you get into your IPL setup is to learn about your players, know your players, and build relationships with your players. And there's various different ways of doing that, and with through communications nowadays, it doesn't matter where they are in the world, you can have those conversations, you can do the personality profilings, you can get the learning styles, all of the things that will mean that every interaction that you have with that player is on the money, as opposed to just based on a whim. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, because you're only playing one format of the game, there's no excuse for you not to understand that game and your team's performance against the trends and the KPIs that you have to do, which then in turn tell you where you need to develop. So it's a fairly simple one for IPL, because it's only one format of the game.
Yeah, and I suppose in that way, there's lessons that club coaches can learn, because they're probably in a similar situation where perhaps we're talking about a longer period of the season and a longer build-up to it, perhaps. But it's a similar thing. It's probably only one format, maybe two, and you're limited to what you can do because of the timescales of, you know, how much training time you've got with people. So there's definitely parallels there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, managing relationships is key in life, isn't it? And how many times do we see it on Sky Sports News that changes and transfers and coaches getting sacked, coaches getting a poor relationship? So it's crucial to know about your players and knowing how to get the best out of them, and not doing it just based on the gut feel, but supporting your gut feel by using different profiling methods, by using questioning, by spending time with the players is absolutely crucial. And the match format stuff, I mean, any coach that wants to move forward in over the next few years needs to get their head around statistics, needs to get around converting data into intelligence to help his coaching, which in turn will help his team.
Berners, you've travelled around the world with pitchers and you've seen some pretty good coaches in action. Where do you see the influence of a coach?
Well, yeah, like Mark said, to bring the guys together, I mean, essentially the IPL is with a group of players that can at times be a bit foreign to each other. So someone like Eric Simons, I guess, has been assistant manager there, so he's already got a little foothold in the franchise and will know a little bit about it. But he's got limited time and limited resources to kind of get them out on the ballpark and all firing. So I actually watched quite an interesting film on the aeroplane the other day called Moneyball. I don't know if you've ever seen that, which is about a baseball coach.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a film, but he made an interesting point in that they focus on wins and not in terms of the players. So in cricket, it'll be runs and wickets, but actually you need to focus on wins. So which part of that, you know, 11-man team is going to get you a wins and concentrating on that side of the game. So I guess he's got to pretty quickly analyse who he's got and who can get him as many wins. But Eric Simons was a great coach. Actually, I saw him when he was with India, assistant coach there in Port of Spain, and he was very direct and prominent, certainly with the bowlers in a couple of the sessions, in highlighting what he deemed correct and not correct in terms of the length and line they should be hitting, basically telling them yes or no. He used a nice synergy with darts and said that at the end of the day, if my bowlers aren't hitting treble 20 every time they bowl, we're not going to win cricket matches. So if they don't hit treble 20, I don't want to know. Which was harsh, yeah, but fair, I guess.
Well, the margins for error are so tight in international cricket, aren't they? You know, you can't slightly overpitch, otherwise you get destroyed. Or, you know, it's a very small margin for error, so you've got to be as strict as you can, haven't you? Really, at that level, at any level, but you know, especially at the highest level.
Yeah, it's interesting. Eric's a great coach and somebody that I've known for a while, and known through Duncan Fletcher, who's obviously working with him at the moment. And he's doing a great job, so it's no surprise to me to see an IPL franchise pick him up. He's got an unbelievable awareness and understanding of the Indians over there, which gives him a great head start, I think. And obviously it'll be interesting to see how many South Africans that he's worked with in the past as well end up at his franchise over the course of the next couple of years, because he'll be familiar with those and have good understanding with them, which comes back to that managing relationships.
And speaking of coaching and analysis, we have an interview this week with Chris Berry, who runs the first facility to be built entirely around four pitch vision systems, which is very exciting for us on the show. And it's also very exciting for him to have, you know, such a competitive advantage. So we've got an interview with Chris coming up after the music. Time for this week's interview, and joining me on the line this week is Chris Berry, who is right in the middle of setting up a brand new training facility in Yorkshire, an indoor net facility which uniquely, for the first time, features four pitch vision systems, in one in each lane there. So hello Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. And it's a very interesting time for us on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, because we want to find out more, a little bit more about what went into the setting up of this brand new indoor net system using Pitch Vision. But let's find out a little bit more about you and your background. Do you you come from a background in sort of online cricket, don't you?
Yes. I was one of the original founders of the Stick Cricket online game, and recently moved out of that, sold my shares in that business to set up some new initiatives, this being one of them.
So what initially gave you the idea of setting up Stick Cricket? Because this all happened long before the advent of 2020, didn't it?
It did, yes. I mean, I was actually working in online games at the time, and I found the original Stickman cricket game and contacted the Australian developer, and basically put the idea to him that rather than just have it as a free to play giveaway game, there's potential to make it into a bit more of a commercial property and develop it a bit further. To be honest, when I first played it, I just knew that it was a great game, and I knew that cricket fans would love it. It encompassed everything that was good about cricket for most people, and that is the sort of hitting the ball as hard as you can and as far as you can. And it was about 2 years after that sort of 2020 really started to take off. So we were sort of already fairly innovative in the style of cricket game we've developed. And I think that's something I like to take forward in. Certainly in this venture, I think we're being very innovative and taking cricket to the next level, just as we did with the game before the 2020s came out.
Yeah, and I think it's that is a theme across those two areas, isn't it? Stick cricket was innovative in cricket, online computer games, and what you're doing now is innovative for people who want to actually get better at playing cricket.
Yeah. I mean, I met the team at Pitch Vision, Richard, and the rest of the team very early on, because Richard was talking to us with regards to stick cricket and the Pitch Vision technology.
Richard being the mastermind behind Pitch Vision, of course, for those who are unfamiliar.
Yes.
Yeah.
I could see straight away that the potential in the technology that he was developing had the potential of it to move cricket forward and to sort of bring the training and development of players forward was phenomenal. And now I've kept in contact with Pitch Vision over the years. And when this opportunity came up, when the venue came up, and I thought, what could I put in this venue? And Pitch Vision just sprang to mind. I could instantly picture having four net lanes and putting Pitch Vision into each. And I thought, rather than just do it as it's done currently with Pitch Vision on top and rollout as a rollout option, put Pitch Vision in from the beginning and develop that from the beginning of the process so that we can educate local players and give them more opportunities than they probably ever had before.
So this isn't just a facility, an elite facility, you know, on a par with ICC, Global Cricket Centre and all that kind of thing. This is a facility designed for people to improve their game, whatever level they're at now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, why have technology like this only available to top-level players? Why not bring it out? West Yorkshire has probably the highest density of cricket clubs possibly in the world. I don't know. It's certainly, there's apparently more cricket clubs in Yorkshire than there are in Australia. And why shouldn't these players have the ability to develop their game and use the technology that's out there? And Pitch Vision is perfect for it. You know, it's something that they can afford to become members of, they can afford to use. And the potential for people around here now is just phenomenal. There was nothing before here. It was all sports halls and rollout mats. And it's gone from that to having a cricket-specific facility that not only has proper and nets, but actually also then brings in the technology, which is the way forward.
That kind of brings me on nicely to my next question, which is when someone comes along, what can they expect? They're going to be able to see, get feedback from their bowling and batting instantly?
Yeah. Currently we haven't got the sidewall sensors in, so it's purely bowling. But we are planning on putting the sidewall sensors in later on this month so that people can come in, they can get instant feedback on their bowling, they can get instant feedback on their batting, see how they're out, see where they're scoring runs, see when they get tired when they're bowling, when they're most effective when they're bowling. At the moment it's not set up with the licenses, so people are just coming in, everyone gets to use the system, and they will always get to use the system, whether they buy a license or not. They're coming in, buying licenses, going online, analysing their own performances on a day-to-day basis, and then improving.
Which is really the key to, isn't it? Being able to see where you're going wrong, where you're going right, and then making step change improvements. I mean, that's the key to mastering anything. Cricket is no different to anything else in that respect, isn't it? So it's a real breakthrough for people who have never had access to something like this before.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, it's got to be used in conjunction with good coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something else that we're very, very keen to promote here, and that is developing coaching skill, sets of coaches who will work with you to improve your game. I think you need both of those things in order for everything to for the players to really make the most of it. But with the facility, the coaching, and the technology all together, you know, the guys in this area really do have an opportunity to live a lifetime.
And for those listening, where are you based? In case someone's listening nearby and thinking, "Oh, I want to have a little go on that for sure."
No, we're in Sorby Bridge, which is just outside Halifax in West Yorkshire. There's about 200 clubs within 20 miles of the venue. So I think from that regard, it's certainly a good one for it.
And if people want to get in touch, if you're one of the 200 clubs, or maybe you're a little bit further afield, if people want to get in touch, what's the best way to book a slot?
If people want to contact us to book a lane, I mean, whether that's on an individual basis for a one-to-one or with a mate who wants to come down and use the bowling machine, or for part of the academy, you can call us on 01422 836 554, or email thecricketfactory.co.uk.
Fantastic. Well, we'll be keeping a very close eye on what you're doing there, because obviously Pitch Vision is tightly integrated in with some real life coaching, which is what we're all very excited about on both sides, I think.
Great. Well, I think it's definitely a good one for us to watch, isn't it? To see how it all develops and how people take to it. But so far, the responses that we've heard have the most often used in leaving and feeding back on the venue has been awesome. So I'm not a big fan of people using the word awesome, but when it's to do with this, I think I am.
Fantastic. Chris, thanks for your time today.
All right. Thanks very much, David.
Time now for the much vaunted questions section on the show. And of course, if you get your question read out and chosen to be the best question of the week, you win a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So without further ado, we've had the questions piling up. So we've got some pre-season type questions this week to fit in with the theme. Berners, what have you got?
We've got a first question here from Michael Lilly, who's in the dreaded conundrum of a swing bowler, and he's asking what to do exactly when the ball's not swinging. He's an outswing bowler himself, but he's found that when the ball isn't swinging, naturally it goes down leg side. So that's not really ideal. And he's just commenting at this seasonal time of the year with pre-season nets, what we would suggest he can try to do to control that line and establish a ball when it's not swinging to go in the right direction.
Harris?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things here. I mean, his background is in the way swing bowler, as you say. It sounds to me as if his alignments are, as with many away swing bowlers, often block themselves off and get their feet lined up with, if you draw a line straight through the feet at foot, then it often takes it down leg side, which isn't ideal. So first thing I would do would be to make him aware of getting his feet in better alignment with his target. So you want a straight line going towards the stumps and going towards his target area more so than down leg side. So he's bowling not around himself, but using his forces as best as possible. And then do some intervention drills, which would be offer one step, and then once he's mastered that, building it back into a full run-up over time, really. So that would be the first thing from a technical perspective. I wrote an article a few weeks ago on the site, actually, which is four ways to bowl when it's not swinging, which is more of a tactical perspective. And so I'd encourage him to have a look at that. And really, in a nutshell, we're talking about the fact that if a ball isn't swinging, then if you work hard enough on it, then you can get it back to swinging. And there needs to be some deliberate tactics, which isn't just the bowler, but also the team, to get some shine and get some lateral movement back into that ball. And, you know, the Pakistanis have been fantastic at it in the past. Marcus Trescothick shining the ball for England in 2005 during the Ashes, getting it into that condition that the likes of Flintoff, Harmison, and Hoggard and Jones can work with is massively important. And really, you can take a good length hitting the top of off anywhere around the world, whether the ball's moving laterally or not. And Glenn McGrath built his whole career on getting the ball in and around off stump, and if it moved and if it swung, it was a bonus. And it's not a bad thing for a bowler who is bowling with some old balls to practice just trying to hit the top of off stump all of the time, because it's very difficult to do anything as a batter, even if it's not swinging laterally. And then look at other angles as well, and angles are massively important. So bowling around the wicket, Malcolm Marshall was a big advocate of this when I was at Hampshire, and if the ball stopped swinging for a bit, we'd work as hard as we could do to get that shine back into the ball so we could get it to move laterally. But whilst we were doing that, we'd get our seamers to bowl around the wicket, slant the ball across the right-handers, and so we could retain a relatively attacking field during that time where the ball wasn't going off straight.
Yeah, I would add to that, especially the point about length. I would add to that by saying that sometimes it's good to bowl without a batsman there because, especially in indoor nets, where you've got very sort of hard, fast and bouncy facilities in your typical indoor club nets. And then you compare that to your typical April, May pitches. Hitting the top of off is, the bounce is a bit different. So one ball that hits the top of off indoors isn't necessarily going to do it outdoors.
Yeah, there's definitely different lengths, but you'd be surprised. And this is where pitch vision is fantastic, in that it can tell you exactly where you're pitching the ball. And the differences that I've seen in terms of varying that length are actually quite small. You know, they're only a foot or so difference in length, but you're absolutely right. There are subtle differences in length that you need to associate with different wicket types, whether it be that rock hard indoor net or a pitch like in Perth at the Wacker, or whether it be your first week of the summer at any of the clubs around the country. You know, being able to hit the top of off even if it's not swinging.
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess my point there was just that you shouldn't worry about the batsman too much.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. I mean, as a bowler, Glenn McGrath, you talked to Glenn McGrath about bowling. What was your aim as a batter, as a bowler? And he said, I'd run up and hit a length as hard as I can, as often as I can, and to get the ball around off stump. And if it swung, it was a bonus. And then you ask him what he did do next ball. He said, I'd run up and hit a length as hard as I can and get it around the top of off stump. And if it swings, it's a bonus. And if it's good enough for that bloke, then it's good enough for most of us, I think.
Got another question here from Maddie. And he's just wondering what the mindset of a player should be in pre-season. Everyone's away from the game for a considerable amount of months, and you've got football and rugby going on and all the rest of it. So he's just wondering what kind of tips you could give to possibly stay focused and also motivated to be up and ready for the coming season.
I'd say that the key to it really is to find a way to keep yourself motivated internally, i.e. you're not relying on some kind of system of you know rewarding yourself for doing well with buying yourself a CD or something. You want to motivate yourself internally, and that way it doesn't even really feel like motivation. You just want to do it because you're achieving something. So a good way to do that is to set yourself some simple targets that you know you can hit, but are also pushing you a little bit. It may be that you naturally do that anyway. Often players do that themselves. They set themselves a target. I'm going to try and achieve this week or whatever. And if you plan it out a little bit, then that's just going to give you that motivation of achieving little things every time that you go to a practice session or go to a net session. You're going to feel like you're heading towards somewhere rather than just going through the motions. So that's sort of a mental thing, if you like. But another good way to stay motivated in nets is to do things that you find fun. So one good example of that would be the BATX system that we often mention. Lawrence Houghton's been on this show, and BATX is a way of involving people much more in what's going on in the nets by keeping them focused on a particular outcome. So it plays it's an MP3 that you can just put onto a CD or whatever and play it through a loudspeaker, and it tells you how many runs that you've got to get in the next over, and then you actually have to run those runs, and you can do it in pairs or you can do it individually, and you can choose when you run those runs, so you can make it realistic. If you defend it and it's you don't get a four for defending it, but if you hit one through the covers, then maybe you run a three if it tells you to run a three at some point in the over. So it's good for fitness. It keeps you motivated. It keeps you focused on the rhythm of the game, which is something that normal nets don't really do. So if you're looking to sort of work on the fitness element plus a certain amount of tactical as well, then using the BATX system is a great way to keep yourself motivated.
I wrote an article quite early on, actually, which is called Three Delightfully Simple Ways to Spice Up Your Net Practice. And it is basically about making your practices functional. And this applies in winter nets, because when people are starting earlier now and doing stuff before Christmas, you can actually get a little bit of Groundhog Day going on by the time you get round to playing that first game out in the middle come April time in the English conditions or come September time in subcontinent and Australian and New Zealand conditions. So to try and avoid that, the things that I put down in the article is to always put a theme for each session. and then relate what you do into that theme. So you can either do that as a group of players, or you can set yourself a goal yourself, just to build on David's point. Today's session, my theme is that I'm going to practice my sweep shot against every ball that I possibly can do off of the spinners, and I'm going to try and dominate them with a sweep. Maybe your theme, and then obviously you can assess your effectiveness against that. To build on David's running between the wickets, I'm a huge fan of doing that. I'm not a massive fan of just having nets where you're facing bowlers, because we don't do that. We change ends. We get spaces to work on our breathing and get ourselves back into a position to bat. Then we have to be able to run between the wickets and be able to collect ourselves in a very short space of time to make sure we're facing the next ball with absolute class. And so I run nets where you run a quick single at full intensity on the third ball, and on the sixth ball you run a three at top intensity, and making sure that you're turning the right way between the wickets and for the sixth ball as well. And what you find is you build fatigue in, which is real, and then as a result you build some coping strategies in to be able to cope with that fatigue. I just think you need to spice your nets up and make sure that they're functional and relevant to the games that you're going to be playing in the summer.
This week's Soapbox is brought to us by the coach. Go ahead, coach, give it to us.
Well, this week I want to talk something to do with fitness, because one of the things that has traditionally been associated with fitness and cricket is going for a jog, going for a run, going around the park in the winter in your woolly hat and getting fit. But I don't think it's the best way to get fit for cricket at all. It's a tradition which has grown up, which has certain benefits, but there's a lot of costs to it. Most notably is that your hips in cricket, you need very very mobile hips. And the problem with running long distances is that you're doing a repetitive movement which locks your hips up. It gets you very good at moving your hips in a very small range of motion, but it doesn't really get you moving fully through the range of motion of your hips. So what that means is that you're increasing your chances of injury. So instead of doing lots of long running this pre-season, stick to doing sprints and lifting weights in the gym, and you'll be a lot better off come the summer. Okay, that's the end of the show for this week, but before we go, as is traditional, we are going to pick a winner of an online coaching course from our questions section. You can check out the online coaching courses at pitchvision.com/academy if you fancy picking up one of those, and if your questions run out, of course, then you can win one of those as a prize. So, Gareth, we've had two questions this week, one from Michael about bowling and one from Maddie about staying focused. Which one did you prefer?
I like the Michael question about being an outswing bowler, because alignment, I've worked with a lot of players in the last 4 or 5 weeks that aren't professional players but are club players, and the thing that I've been able to help them on has been their alignment as they bowl, and the results that have come from that have been startling to them, but very pleasing from my perspective to see them improve over the courses of the sessions that I've worked with. So I think the question from Michael takes its day.
Congratulations, Michael, and if you want to send in your question and have your chance to win a prize, you can do so in the normal way, and Berners, you can tell us the phone number and the email address, can't you?
It's you can drop us a line on 020 8816 7691, or drop us an email, coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, and you can also get us on Facebook. If you do a search for us on there, we're Pitch Vision Academy, and you can also find us on Twitter. PV Cricket Coach is where we hang out on there. If you want to subscribe to the show, you can do so in iTunes. Go to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and if you like us, make sure you leave a review. We love the 5-star ones very much. And if you don't use iTunes, then you can get to the show by going to pitchvision.com/academy and follow the links to the podcast, and you'll find a feed in there to add to whatever podcast listening program that you use. So we're back for 2012. That's about it for this particular show, but we're going to be every week from now on for the foreseeable. So until next week, we'll see you next time. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, Coach.
Go ahead, coach. Give it to us.
Do that again. Sorry, I laughed over you. Sorry. That's fine. Just say that.
This week's podcast. This week's soapbox. This week's soapbox is brought to us by the coach. Go ahead, coach. Give it to us.